Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
And you know, this is Carol the Coach, and I am Carol Jurgensen Sheets, and welcome to Sex Help with Carol the Coach. Hey, this show is all about sexual addiction. So if you've tuned in perhaps for the very first time, I welcome you to a place where you'll get information. You'll find out about resources, and you'll get healthier, because I know that this is a topic and an area that, you know, we don't talk much about. It's like this epidemic that nobody is talking about. I don't get it. But about a year and a half ago, I made it my mission to finish up my training and start this radio show, because I knew that people use media to get their information. So I am so excited to be with you tonight. You know, I typically interview guests from treatment centers, authors who have written books, directors who have created programming, or clients who have been able to weather lots of issues. And they come back stronger as a result. And tonight we're going to be interviewing Peter. And Peter is a client who figured out how to kick in his recovery by surrendering. Now, you know, you think of the word surrender and you go, I don't want to do that. Who wants to surrender? I need control. I need to know what I can do to make things better. But truly, if you follow a 12-step program and you're working recovery, you find out that it's all about surrender. Surrender makes you healthier. And surrender makes the difference. So I thought, you know, what client have I had that really works a strong program around this concept? And I thought about Peter, and he graciously agreed to talk with us tonight. There may be times that I kind of move away from the mic. I've got a horrible cold, and I'm getting ready to go to the Bahamas. So I am doing my best to get healthy and to work out all these germs, because, you know, I am a believer in your attitude really feeds into how you feel, both emotionally and physically. And so I may have to sneeze, and I'll put you on mute so you don't have to hear it, but I want you to know I am here for you tonight, as always. And if you have a question, you can always feel free to email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. And I take your criticism, whether it be positive or negative, to heart and always get back to you. I know that I recently had, gosh, it was a very interesting email criticizing the fact that it's, they thought, Carol, you seem to promote the Meadows more than other treatment centers. So I explained to my emailer, hey, I bet you I do that because I write a blog for the Meadows and I'm very connected to them. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to do that, but at the same time, when a treatment center is good, I definitely want to spend some time talking about it. I want you all to know about it. Just last week, I had a woman who, she had a terribly, terribly neglectful family life. Her father had molested her and her sisters repeatedly. Her mother was in absolute denial. And what I realized was individual therapy was not going to be enough. We needed to do something to jumpstart her eagerness to get healthy. And so I thought about Survivor Week, which is at the Meadows. For people who have been survivors of trauma, you don't necessarily need an entire treatment program. You can go for workshops or intensives. And there are all sorts of facilities and people that provide those. But regardless, you know, this man's email said, hey, Carol, the subject matter is some constructive criticism. And he said, you know, I listen to your podcast weekly. Sometimes I listen to it several times. And he said, sometimes there are some triggering things that you talk about. You know, I'm a recovering sex addict, and other listeners like me might find the word triggering. Well, he says, actually, when you use the term hookup in a general way, it reminds me of websites that their aim is to do just that, hook people up for sex. I understand the context you are using it, and I understand I'm responsible for how I respond to such words. I just wanted you to know that it bothers me when you use that word. Well, you know, this man who emailed me wanted me to understand that that was very, very triggering for him. He said, would you consider not using that word? I'm open to your response. Now, personally, I know there are going to be certain words I use. If you were in therapy with me, there might be certain things I wear. You know, I was talking with a man in group one day, and he said that he had been at a treatment center where they wore boots, over-the-knee boots, and it was very triggering for him. And I explained to him that, you know what, when winter comes, those are the warmest boots a woman can wear. I will be wearing those boots too. So we need to work that out. You see, what happens in the therapy session or what happens in group oftentimes is very, it definitely replicates what happens outside in your office, at your workplace, or at home. And so I was glad that he could openly talk about what triggered him. And then I could talk to him about what he could do to no longer be triggered by that. Now, you know, the brain actually, for 3 to 5 years, will more than likely have ruts where when a man or a woman sees a certain thing, hears a certain word, feels a certain feeling, that all may be triggering. And so I, as a therapist, want to help somebody work through that. And that does not necessarily mean that I want to avoid whatever it is that's triggering. It may mean, let's talk about it. Let's get it out in the open. If the addict in you isn't keeping all that information secret, you may actually get healthier. He later admitted to me, he said, you know, Carol, you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, over-the-knee high boots are triggering, but so are painted toenails. So are short skirts. So are tight shirts. So are red blouses. And, you know, he had a whole list of things that actually affected him. And so we talked about what could he do to make that situation better. And, again, the key is talking about it and talking about it with healthy individuals. And if you're in a healthy relationship with somebody, he is with me, there are two things that will happen. One is we'll figure out what to do to get past the trigger. And two, you know, it heightens my sensitivity to maybe I shouldn't wear that outfit during group. You know, I mean, we can give and take some. There is no doubt about that. So I appreciate somebody's honesty. And, you know, the person that sent me this email was also the one that said, hey, I often hear you talk about the Meadows, and I imagine that that is top-notch, yet probably affordable for a select few. I'm curious, as much as you tout Patrick Carnes, you rarely mention Pine Grove as a place Dr. Carnes practices for many years until recently. He says, I think there are other sex rehabs that deserve mentioning or interviewing on your program. Well, I agree, and I've had people from Keystone, from Capstone, from Sante, from Timberline Knowles, from the Meadows, from Betty Ford, from Hazelden. I've had a lot of guests who've actually talked about their programming and talked about their projects. So I appreciate his feedback. Again, since I blog on the Meadows, I might have them in the forefront of my brain, as well as I think they're absolutely a phenomenal, phenomenal treatment center. But I would love for you to email me at carolthecoach@aol.com and let me know what you believe has helped you in your own recovery. And, you know, let's see if we can't get some of those people on. Let's share with the world what the different treatment centers are doing, what programs they're offering. And we all know that it is absolutely imperative that whatever treatment you seek, it has to fit you. Now, I always say give something a certain amount of time. If you go to a 12-step program, I say give a meeting 6 times before you make a judgment. If you seek counseling, always look for a certified sexual addictions therapist. But also, I want you to at least give that therapist 4, 5, or 6 sessions before you make a determination, because let's face it, the information that you're talking about can be terribly difficult. And it's not going to feel comfortable at first. So I want to know, what is it that you want to talk about? And I want to know that you've given it a real opportunity before you've made a judgment. Because it's real easy to get out of something because it's uncomfortable, and that is absolutely what we don't want you doing. You know, we want so very badly for you to really work on your issues and get comfortable. That is our main objective. So I am so happy to have you on the show. If you ever need to email me, I can be reached at carolthecoach@aol.com, or you can go to my website. I have two of them. One is my regular website, which is www.carolthecoach.com, and the other one is Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And like I said, tonight we have Peter, who's going to be talking about surrendering and how that kick-started his program. It intensified it. It made it even better. And, you know, oftentimes I get a lot of questions about what can I do to make my life better? What can I do to make my recovery more meaningful? And so that's why I'm so very grateful when we can talk with people who have expertise in working their program and can share it with others. That's what it's all about. So, Peter, welcome to the program. You're talking
Hi, Carol.
To Carol, the coach. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Just fine. You know, you have done an exemplary job of practicing surrender. And so I thought if we could talk about that a little bit, I thought our listeners might really have some questions about what does that mean? Does that mean losing control? So if I could, may I ask you, what is your idea of surrender?
Well, thanks, first of all, for having me on. And surrender is, I think it's a great topic. It's a great topic. It's an important topic. And for me, surrender has meant giving my life over to a higher power. And for me, that higher power is God. But I'd stress to people who maybe aren't religious or, you know, don't believe in God, that's okay, that your higher power can be something, anything bigger than yourself. It can be nature. It can be the universe. It can be your family. It can be a support group. And the point of surrender, though, is to give yourself over to something greater than yourself. And I guess I had this realization, this awakening, this awareness that came to me, you know, as I get into recovery that, you know, I'm not the center of the universe. As much as I'd like to think so, as much as I acted that way, you know, in my addiction, the reality is I really don't have control over anything or anyone. And surrender is making that realization. And for me, you know, that means that everything that happens to me is really a result of God's will, my higher power's will. So what I need to do, and what I need to do to get into recovery, is to step aside and let God do his thing and stop fighting God, stop resisting God, surrender to his will, surrender to my higher power's will. And so, you know, it sounds passive, but it's really not passive. And, I mean, there's a synergy between the person surrendering, between myself and my higher power. I need to actually make the active getting out of the way. And that's what I'm called to do. And I let my higher power, I surrender the rest to him, do the rest. So I go about my daily life. I don't just lay in bed and say, okay, higher power, you know, feed me, clothe me. I get up, you know, I work my recovery program. I go to work. You know, I spend time with my kids when I see them. I do all those things we're supposed to do. I follow my moral compass, and I surrender the outcome of those things to my higher power. So to me, that's what surrender is.
Well, and you know, for some people, they may be hearing about this term for the first time ever in their life. So mm-hmm. when you say, I surrender myself to my higher power, in some ways, I think you are saying that you surrender the outcome. You know, you do the things you know are right for you, and then you mm-hmm. assume that the universe, that God, is going to mm-hmm. be making this work towards your best good, even if it doesn't seem so at first.
Absolutely. That's very well said. That's very well said. And sometimes we think we know what we want. And we realize, well, gosh, that, you know, that I'm glad that didn't happen, because had it happened, maybe things wouldn't have turned out the way, you know, they should have. And, you know, conversely, sometimes, you know, we push for desired outcome, and we get it and say, oh, that wasn't what I thought it was going to be. So instead, we do what we think is the right thing. We follow our moral compass, and we kind of, as they say, let the ships fall where they may. I mean, that's another way of maybe saying it, but the bottom line is like you say, we surrender the outcome. And we accept the fact that the outcome is, even in ways we may not understand, the best thing for us. And that's a radically different concept than you have, than I had when I was in full addiction. And, you know, my mentality was, I want what I want when I want it. And I'll never forget, my sponsor and I, we were in a small study group, a book study group, and we were answering a question in the back of the book, and that was my answer. And then he started laughing, and then he read his answer, which was, I want what I want when I want it. I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. And, you know, that's very much, you know, the addict mindset. And so the surrender concept is, no, I'm not going to get what I want when I want it. I'm going to let my higher power make the determination as to what is best for me.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your addiction and what you suffered from, and then let's talk about how you actually used the process of surrender to intensify the work that you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my addiction was basically centered about internet pornography. And it's something that I would say, like a lot of addictions, kind of gradually snuck up on me over the years, a decade or more, I'd say. And, you know, it got to a point when, you know, I was doing all the classic white knuckling it, trying to, you know, it was something that I didn't like to do, something I didn't want to do, but I did, and I couldn't stop it. I had no control over it. And much in the way an alcoholic will use a drink, or a cocaine addict will use cocaine, or a drug addict will use whatever their drug of choice is, it was my drug of choice, in effect. It was really a numbing kind of thing, a medication of sorts, and it was my way to escape issues in my marriage at the time, to escape work-related stress, anything. You know, I could think of any excuse, you know, to jump on the computer, and did. And it became something I couldn't control, and I really, you know, it's interesting. I've talked to a lot of people, you know, in the program, and a lot of people have said, I miss my addict. And for me, I've never missed my addict, or we say the addict, the person inside of us. I've never missed my addiction, because for me, it was just totally opposite of the kind of life I wanted to live. But yet I found myself there. And so, you know, working with a therapist, I knew something was wrong, and could this be some kind of an addiction? And he suggested, well, it could be, maybe go to an SAA meeting. And I did. And I went there, and I listened, and I heard a lot of behaviors that were nothing like mine. But I heard a lot of people with the same mindset that I had, that same I'm the center of the universe mindset, you know, I want what I want when I want it, you know, prideful type of thinking, as I would say. And so that's where I knew I was in the right place. And that's when I started to get into recovery, was when I made that realization, okay, this is where I need to be, and this is where I'm going to get better.
Okay, so that is when you made the realization. About how long into the program were you when you made that realization?
Oh, the first day, the first meeting. I mean, I was white knuckling it probably for a couple of months or so before I went to my first meeting. And then I get to the first meeting, and I heard it was just a timing issue in terms of just being able to get to the meeting. And I heard people talking, and then I knew this is where I need to be. And within very short order, I prayed about it, and I said, I need to find a sponsor, and I want to start working the program as quick as I could. And, you know, I was very fortunate to find an excellent sponsor, whom I know you know, and, you know, we just started, you know, aggressively working the program together ever since, and that was over 6 months ago. And, you know, it's just been just life-changing. I mean, life-changing on so many levels for me.
Well, and you are a person that is very open to insight, and I really do believe that it sounds like you're the type of person that you want the assistance, you want the resources, you want the support, and you really can tell when they're present in your life. So, you know, here you were, you were addicted to internet pornography, and how did you even know that you had a problem?
I guess I just realized this was something that I didn't want to do, but I couldn't stop doing it. And I said, well, that's kind of sounds like something like addiction. And I guess I had enough insight and had enough knowledge to know that this is something that could be an addiction. And, you know, of course, I was in some denial because, you know, well, I don't use it at work. I mean, I work in front of a computer all day and I never use it at work, and I never did. And my sponsor was like, are you sure? I'm like, honestly, never did. So I was able to, you know, in the same way maybe someone will convince themselves they're a weakened alcoholic, oh, you know, I don't, you know, this is, really isn't an addiction. But, of course, that's denial. And so, you know, but it was still something that was kind of, you know, it didn't jive with the way I was living my life, the life I was living in my church, the life I was trying to, you know, live with my family. And so there was always a disconnect. It was a double life. And it just got to a point where I knew this wasn't right. This wasn't who I am. And I have to do something about it. And, you know, at the time I was, you know, I was separated. It was, you know, before I was divorced or, well, yeah, it was around that whole time that that was going on. And so my life was just an absolute shambles. And hence I was in therapy, not with you at the time, but someone else. And that's when I started to think that, yeah, there are a lot of pieces to this puzzle, and this might be one of the pieces. And so it was one of the pieces, not the only piece, but a piece as to what happened with everything that went on. And so that's what got me into the program and, you know, starting the work recovery.
Well, that makes total sense. And for a lot of people that may be wondering, are they doing what is normal behavior? I mean, you oftentimes hear men say, you know, yeah, I looked at porn, but I thought all guys did that. And certainly there's a large percentage of men that do look at porn, but it
sure
has to become compulsive and obsessive. Now, how did you know that your pornography usage was obsessive and compulsive?
I guess it was, you know, when I did it, it could go for an hour or maybe 2 hours, you know, with something that was secretive. It was something that I just couldn't for a long period of time walk away from. So I could go for maybe a couple of weeks or maybe even a little bit longer than that. But then some stress in my life triggered me to go back to it. And it just seemed to me to be more than I should. And ultimately it didn't matter. It didn't matter whether it was normal or abnormal. And, I mean, I remember taking that test on the computer that you had sent me to, or your website had sent me towards, which I would, you know, anyone who's unsure of what's going on, I'd advise them to go to that test. And it's very helpful. And I was actually on the low end of the curve for addiction, and it kind of overlapped even the high end of normal. But it didn't matter to me. It didn't matter to me what the – in my mindset, I didn't want to have this behavior anymore. And, you know, I've met people who are in recovery from drugs and alcohol, and you see a radical transformation in them. I said, well, you know, call it what you will. You know, to me, it's acting like it's an addiction, whether it's a mild addiction or a severe addiction. It didn't really matter to me. It was a behavior I couldn't control. I wanted to get rid of it. And when I heard people at the 12 Steps program talking in a way that I understood, it seemed to fit. And I cannot tell you how grateful I am for the 12 Step program in recovery that it's given me, because it's changed my life on levels well beyond just not using porn. I mean, it just has. And I think that something, you know, that maybe some people know or don't know is the difference between sobriety and recovery. And, you know, sobriety is, you know, not using drugs or alcohol or not acting out sexually. You know, it's not doing the thing you don't want to do. Recovery is something different. Recovery is, for me anyway, recovery is surrender. Recovery is living a different life. It's putting that behind you. It's a spiritual transformation. And so you can have sobriety and not have recovery. And, you know, we've heard the term dry drunk, or people know the term dry drunk. And someone who doesn't drink, but they've just channeled that into maybe anger towards other people or what have you, or they find that, you know, the addiction will go into another outlet. They may smoke marijuana. They may do whatever. But recovery is a radical spiritual transformation that occurs. And, you know, my belief, it's because of surrender. And it changes your whole life. It changes your perspective. And you realize you don't have control of anything anymore. You never did. It was an illusion to think that you did.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head, first of all, when you said that the behaviors you were doing, whether they were obsessive or compulsive, they were behaviors that you knew were not who you wanted to be. You did not want to show up and be somebody who looked at internet porn for an hour a day. That was just not who you wanted to be. Then on top of it, you shared with our audience that clearly you had said you were not going to do this anymore and found yourself going back to those same old behaviors. That's that kind of loss of control. So how long would you say did you struggle with your own inner thoughts of, oh, I shouldn't do this, oh, I'm bad, oh, this is wrong, before you got help, whether it be with that counselor or with the 12-step program?
Oh, I would say about 10 years, give or take. And I would say, you know, things really escalated when broadband internet took off. So whenever that was, you know, 2000-ish, 2001, 2002, that's when I would say the addiction started to escalate, because it's just a matter of availability and it's a technical kind of factor. So from then forward, you know, it was a constant struggle. I mean, it was a constant struggle, and I hated myself for it. I mean, it was just, you had this, it's the classic addict cycle, you know, it's like you get stressed, you know, you act out, and then you feel bad about it, you get stressed, and, you know, and it's just, you sort of spiral. And, you know, you try to, like, knuckle it, and you try to pray about it, and you take it, depending on your faith, you may take it to confession, what have you, and then you walk away, you feel good about it, you're not going to do it, and the next thing you know, here you are, a couple, two, three, 4 weeks later, you're back at it. And it's just, you know, and still you struggle. And honestly, again, there's the denial, and there's a lot of shame associated with it, and so there's this not, you know, this desire not to talk about. Who do you talk to about it? And a lot of people don't know that there are. I mean, I didn't know much about the 12-step program, that FA even existed. So it's not like you even know that there are resources out there. And so, you know, fortunately, there's more and more education about sex addiction out there. Shows like yours, I mean, the Intergroup in the Indianapolis area has a billboard that they're sponsored. You know, sex addiction is real, and there's a hotline number people can call into, and there's a website on there. So fortunately, there's more education out there that this is something real that people are struggling with. Whether people believe there's a medical basis or not, it's irrelevant. You can view it as a spiritual disease, but it's something ultimately that's hard to control or impossible to control, and the 12-step program works. And
as I heard you say, you might even have to go to confession and then find yourself still doing it. So it's like people that are spiritual, people that really, they have different parts of their life that they're really, really proud of, can still have these kind of behaviors and know that they need to get help. They just don't know when, where, or how. So you went to your first counselor, and how long would you say you worked with him or her?
We worked together for 6 months, I'd say, plus or minus. And, you know, we were working just on a lot of other issues with my marriage breakup and such. And, you know, we didn't really – it's not an area that he had a lot of expertise in. And it was something he encouraged me, you know, to get into the – to go to the program. And then that's whereby I met my sponsor, who then I ended up coming to see you, because this is obviously an area that you have a lot of expertise in. And, you know, now I'm working with you, which has been another blessing, is to have someone who, this is what they do, a lot of what they do is this area. And I would encourage people, if this is something that they're struggling with, you know, to seek out a qualified therapist who has expertise in this area, because that can make a huge difference in terms of their understanding of what the problem is, you know, working with you to get you the proper resources and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I 100% agree with you. You know, it's not that I'm bad-mouthing any other counselors, but this is a specialized niche, and there are certain things you need to do. And believe it or not, there are a lot of counselors that don't even know that 12-step programs exist. And although there is a certain anonymity to 12-step programs, we're really not supposed to divulge too much about them, because they absolutely do not believe in advertising what they do. They believe that people send them out, and then the program itself benefits the person. So I want to be very respectful.
Attraction, not promotion, as they say.
Yes. So would you explain that to our listening audience?
Well, the idea is that, you know, you go to the program, and you sit there and you listen to people, and the program doesn't go out and advertise itself. I mean, as I said, there is a billboard up, but it's not like it's informational just to let people know that this is a real addiction and to get people to the website. But the idea is, you know, there has to be some desire on the part of the person seeking recovery to go and to go and to at least listen. So there has to be, I think, an effort to get there. And the idea is it's not a marketing kind of thing. I mean, the program doesn't market itself. It's, oh, yeah, we've got the cure for addiction. I mean, it's like, hey, we found that this works for us. We invite you to come and see if it'll work for you. I mean, that's how AA started. It was just a couple of alcoholics getting together to see if they could stay sober together. And then it grew and grew and grew, and it grew kind of at a grassroots level. And that's how these programs work. They're very grassroots. And each different, you know, chapter, each different meeting is self-governing. I mean, it uses the same format more or less, but every meeting is a little bit different. So there, you know, I would encourage people, if you go to a meeting and this doesn't seem right, I don't think I fit here. There are different meetings. There's meetings almost every day of the week in the Indianapolis area. And so try some different meetings, because you will eventually find one that is going to maybe fit a little bit better, either for your, it's hard to, I don't want to use personality or taste, but there's some meetings that just feel better. I can't explain other than that they just, there's just an energy there that vibrates with you, and other meetings may vibrate different for a different person.
100%. And I had, just before you got on the call, I had said, you know, if you've gone to a meeting, my approach is go about 6 times before you make a decision whether that meeting is for you or not. If after 6 sessions you don't feel comfortable, then go to another meeting and see if the composition and the format is similar or different, because I guarantee you the composition will be different because every meeting has different people with different issues.
Yep.
So, okay, so then we were talking about, obviously, you've had this addiction for about 10 years, and you referenced your wife's divorce. So one of the things I ask people that wonder if they're addicts, I say, well, what are some of the consequences that you've had to deal with because of this horrible obsession? And so I'm going to ask you, what were the consequences of your addiction?
I would say, I've been thinking about that, and first and foremost, I would say is that it pulled me away from God. And, you know, in my addiction, I was turned in on myself. And I thought I could solve my own problems. I thought that this was a way to make myself feel better. And then I thought that I could, you know, basically white knuckle my way through this thing. And, you know, I turned inward on myself. There was something there that needed to be healed. And instead of turning to God to heal it, even though at some level I was trying to do that, I was turning to myself to do it. So that was a huge consequence for me. It did, you know, I lied to my wife. She never knew about the addiction, even until after the divorce. I did tell her, and she just had no idea. But, you know, it was a contributing factor to the breakup of my marriage. I think it created some expectations of her that were unrealistic. It wasn't the only factor, but it was a factor. You know, and the breakup of the marriage has had consequences in regards to my relationship with my children. And that's hard, and that's something that's an ongoing repair process. And we love each other, but it's still hard for them. And there are a number of close friendships that I've lost as a result of the divorce, people who were friends to both of us. And, well, you know, people in these situations unfortunately take sides. And that hurts. And so those are all the consequences. Not all are direct consequences, but, you know, some of them are dominoes that fell, you know, down the way, so to speak. And then ultimately, you know, another big consequence was I had lost self-respect for a long time and was really starting to dislike myself. And so that was another thing that I had to deal with. And so that's also part of recovery, is kind of getting back some self-worth. And even though it's funny, because in addiction you're mired in pride, but by the same token you're mired in shame. So you've got both extremes kind of going back and forth. And so it's a matter of kind of getting rid of the shame and getting rid of the pride. And that, again, that's where the surrender comes in. And there were a number of, I would say, very significant consequences.
And so what was it that absolutely tipped you over to saying, I can't take it any longer?
There wasn't any one thing. I guess, you know, when you're going through the whole process of a broken marriage and, you know, your kids are mad at you and you're depressed and, you know, you just find yourself keep going back to this behavior you don't like, you say, wait a minute, you know, this isn't something I want to do anymore. Maybe this had something. I was looking for answers. I was looking for answers, you know, as to why everything kind of fell apart. And, you know, in that process, you know, at first, okay, everything that went wrong in my marriage was my ex-wife's fault. Then it became everything was my fault. And then you kind of come to this balanced understanding, well, you know what, there was just a lot of stuff going on. So in that whole process, that whole arc, in there, you know, the addiction was a piece of it. And so that's where it kind of got pulled out and said, you know what, I've been wanting to deal with this thing for a long time. You know, let's do it. And I just kind of had that. I just said, you know what, I don't want to deal with this anymore. And, you know, so it wasn't any one particular thing. It was a whole process of dealing with a lot of emotional things at the time. And this kind of fell out of that. So it's a blessing that it did, because it's something I've wanted to deal with. And, you know, you shake a tree hard enough, sometimes apples fall to the ground. This is one of the apples that fell to the ground that was rotten that I had to, you know, get rid of.
And so, you know, here you are. You've been in recovery how long?
6 months.
Okay, 6 months. And would you say that your recovery feels solid, that you're kind of shaky, that you've had slips or relapses?
I've had probably about 8 or 9 months of sobriety. And 6 months, I would say, my recovery started, I would say, sort of when I got into the program. And I have been very blessed not to have any slips and feel very solid. I have not had any cravings. I haven't been tempted. I haven't even gotten, you know, I work in front of the computer, you know, for 8 or 10 hours a day, and I haven't even gotten close to wanting to get anything on the computer. And I feel like the amazing thing for me is I feel like I've done nothing different except surrender and work my program. And, you know, you don't just snap your fingers and surrender. You know, surrender is a daily process. You know, it's sort of an initial process of, okay, I'm going to surrender, and then there's this daily process of surrender. And then I can only speak from my own experience, but for me, the critical thing has been working the steps. You know, it's one thing to go to a meeting. The meetings are fantastic, and I think you have to go to meetings as well. But I really firmly believe you have to work the steps of the program, and it is work. Make no bones about it. I mean, my first step, I did a lot of writing. My fourth step, which is, you know, that personal inventory, I mean, I filled an entire legal pad. And it's a lot of writing, and there's work with your sponsor, and then there's a lot of reading. I've read, I mean, just a lot of different, you know, recovery books and such. Now, I have a very rigorous recovery program that I follow, and I think that's been a big help as well.
Well, yes, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, if somebody heard that you filled a whole notepad, that might scare them off from doing the work. This is how Peter deals with improving his sense of self. And although there is writing involved, there's no doubt about it, and there is talking with a sponsor and there is sharing and fellowship, everybody does it a different way. I would say, Peter, that you tend to be more intellectual than maybe the average person, and so writing for you is actually a release.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's one, and I would, this, I can only speak from my own experience. And everyone does it differently, and everyone, there's no rush, and everyone works their program at a different pace, and some people may spend a year on their four steps. And so everyone is different. So I don't mean to scare people to say, oh my gosh, you know, this is going to require me to get an extra degree, you know, go back to college, whatever. It's nothing like that. You know, we're all different, as you pointed out astutely there. But yeah, for me, I mean, writing is a good way to work recovery. I mean, if I find myself dealing with an issue in my personal life that I want to process, one of the ways that I will do that is I'll just journal. I'll journal my feelings down, And in doing so, and then in talking to you or to other friends, my sponsor or friends that I have got a close circle of friends that I can talk to things about, that helps me process as well. So yeah, everyone's different. You know, I also have, you know, as I said, a pretty structured program. I mean, I run every day or, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. I do yoga, you know, on a regular basis 4 times a week. I go to my meetings every week. I have every day at 9 in the morning, I stop my work and I do 3 or 4 different recovery readings. You know, as I said, I've got a close circle of friends that I reach out to if I feel like I just anything in my life is stressing me. I mean, I haven't really had to make a call, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm going to lapse. It's more been, you know, I've got this relationship stress issue I'm working on. What do you think? You know, give me some, you know, give me your input on this. You know, help me, you know, deal with my blind spots. Or I'll call my sponsor if I'm having, you know, an issue over something that's stressing me out. And typically it'll be like, oh, this is going on with my kids. We're having a disagreement about doing Christmas. So I'll call my sponsor and just, you know, check that in with him. And we'll talk about it, and that makes me feel better. And that's a way of staying safe and not internalizing, not trying to deal with everything myself. And for me, that's part of my recovery, is not trying to just take control of everything myself. It's reaching out there for other people to give me their input, their strength, their experience.
Well,
you know, talk about journaling
as well
thoughts.
We've talked about the fact that addicts keep things inside. They don't necessarily share. And so in healthy recovery and healthy relationships, you do have some support people that you can talk to at any time.
Absolutely. And I would encourage people to do that. And, you know, oftentimes programs will have call lists of people. The SAA website has there are call-in, you know, you can go to call-in meetings. If you can't get to a meeting, you can actually call into a meeting, and those meetings typically will have lists of people who have their phone numbers from all over the country. You can call someone in Phoenix, Arizona, and, hey, I'm having a problem, and they'll put their phone number or email out there for you to, you know, to contact them because they want to help you. Because part of recovery, as you get further in the process, is giving back. It's helping other people. And so by, you know, helping other people, like my sponsor has told me, he says, you know, I appreciate having you as a sponsee because it helps me in my recovery, in the same recovery. So, you know, you should never feel bad about asking for help. Never feel bad about making a phone call. I mean, it's so important. And there are so many people out there who want to help, and they're more than happy to help. Even if it's 2 a.m, they may be a little tired, but believe me, if they say to call them anytime, they mean it.
Well, and that's a good point. So, again, this recovery program is not just you doing your reading, doing your work. It's also connecting and being part of the fellowship, and that is so very important in terms of realizing that you're not alone and that not only can you be helped by other people, but you can help others. And so it's a very reciprocating process. And you know, before you were talking about that cycle of addiction where when you're doing something horrible, you end up feeling worse, and then that makes you do something horrible because you just kind of give up. And
exactly.
Yeah. And
been there,
and
done
so,
that, as they say, you know.
Say that again?
I said been there, done that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. That's a classic.
So now, do you think that you will be going to 12-step programs and seeking counseling forever? I mean, is this a long-term process, or will there be an end of the road someday?
I don't think you ever graduate the program. I think that when you run a 12-step program, if you want to stay in recovery, in my opinion, you stay in your 12-step program for the rest of your life. Counseling, I don't know. I mean, I think over time, probably the frequency of counseling may go down. But I think you always want to have someone you can talk to, turn to for advice, check in with, just stay honest with yourself, and to stay in recovery. So I think recovery is a lifelong process. It's a commitment to not just getting well, but staying well. And I really, truly think the idea of giving back, whether it's to, you know, run a meeting or to, you know, be a sponsor someday or in any way possible, I think that's so important because recovery is a gift. You know, it's a spiritual transformation. It's a gift from our higher power. And so it's something I think we're called to give back to help other people, you know, achieve themselves. So for me, I see it as a lifelong process. I really do.
Well, that makes total sense. So as we begin to wrap up for tonight, tell me a little bit how your life is different and how it's better.
It's better in the sense that I just have a different outlook on life now. I mean, this whole surrender concept has allowed me to give so many things over with my kids. I mean, driving down the street, if I'm behind a slow person, who's driving too slow for my taste anyway, and I grew up, you know, and I grew up in a bigger city and I'm used to, you know, fast driving, I now say, well, you know, I kind of almost hear my sponsor in the back of my head. There must be some reason why my higher power wants me to be behind this slow person or to get to where I'm going 10 minutes late. And, you know, it's liberating. I mean, it's just absolutely liberating to have that peace. It's really a sense of peace. So that has been just life-changing for me. So I think that I want people to know that recovery is not just about, as we said, staying, you know, sober. It's not just about putting the addiction aside and keeping the addiction in check, however you want to phrase that. It's about spiritually changing yourself or having your higher power change you. And it changes you. It changes you in ways that you never thought possible. And you'll get the sense of peace, a sense of serenity, and things that used to bother me don't bother me anymore. I mean, not everything. I mean, you know, there's still things that bother me. I mean, I'm human. We're all human. But so many things that bothered me and so many things that I would overreact to, I just simply don't anymore. And that is a tremendous
blessing. You've had a transformation. You are a better person as a result of all this work. It's just that you learned how to handle the addiction. You are now more patient. You have more faith. You let go and let God. You probably are a better dad. Do you think you might be a better dad?
Oh, I think so. I think so. I mean, the hard part is my kids don't live in the same town, so it's harder for them to see that. But I think they see changes, and they've made some comments to that effect. And it's a long, you know, the healing process with them is going to take a long time. But the fact that I can actually let that go and not try to fix it now, and just understand it's going to be a process, I could not have done that before recovery. I simply could not have done that. So the fact that I can actually entertain, the one thing I really want to share, if we have a minute with the audience, is a quote from Richard Rohr, who I know you know. He's written some wonderful books, not all related to addiction. But he said this, and I think it's quite profound. He says, "You don't so much think yourself into a new way of living as much as you live yourself into a new way of thinking." And I think living yourself into a new way of thinking, that's what recovery is. And that's what the 12-step program will do for you over time. And, you know, it's that stinking thinking that Alcoholics Anonymous talks about. You know, that you just jettison that. And you just start living a different way, and then you start to think differently. And that is one of the gifts of recovery. And it's just, I'm here to say it's amazing. And it's nothing that I've done. It's all God. It's all my higher powers. And this is not, you know, my own pride. This is my thankfulness to Him. And, you know, for me, surrender is, you know, it's not something I do because I fear God. It's something I do because I love Him and I want to be closer to Him. So I think surrender should be done out of love, whether it's to God or if you want to do it for your family, it doesn't matter. But it's something we do out of love and, you know, our kids, what have you.
think I was saying that we had some technical difficulties, and I'm so sorry about that. But I want you to know that you can affect change in so many different ways. So feel free at any point to email me at carolthecoach.com. I know you listen from all over the world. I was seeing where I have 81,000 listeners now. That is amazing. So get to the site, www.sexhelp.com, and look up your own zip code, your own city, your own state, your own country, your own province, and find out what CSATs are available to help you. There's several of us that's started. So there is always a way when you want recovery that it can happen. My thanks to Peter, who did a super job of describing surrendering. And I will be replaying a show next week because I'll be off on the holiday break. But we'll catch you back here on New Year's Eve Eve. And until then, I always say, only be one of you at all times. I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. No matter what your plight, no matter what you're dealing with, transformation's possible. And I'm here to prove it. You're listening to Carol Jurgensen Sheets. Hey, I'm Carol the Coach. Have a great week and a good holiday.